For those who arrived late, just to note, we are not going to be doing a moment of silence at 11:11, but we dedicated learning from the Shir for the veterans who are honored today. Okay, no. You can stand up, yes, absolutely. Freedom of expression. So, what I want to discuss, and this will end up likely continuing next week as well, is the question of how a seller is able to successfully subvert the laws of Onah. And this is going to revisit our earlier discussions of Mechila and build on them. And the starting point is the Gemara that we're up to, Bav Mitzia Nun Aleph Amud Aleph to Amud Beis, which is what I brought you on the sheet in Source Aleph. Everyone has the sheets, right? We're good? Okay. Itmar. Josh, if you want to look on with somebody, you can. Be out in the cold. You can look on with somebody. Okay. So, the Gemara starts at the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. Itmar. Ha'omer l'chaveru amanas she'in l'cha alay onah. Let's say somebody says, I'm going to sell you this item on condition that you can't claim onah from me. So Rav Amar yesha lo alav onah, Shmuel Amar ein lo alav onah. So Rav says, doesn't work. That condition is irrelevant. The waiver does not work. And Shmuel says, no, you could actually waive your right to claim onah. We want to trace this to a machlokas tanoim between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in the context of kiddushin. We know that a man marries a woman, she is entitled to, among other things, she'er ksus va'onah. Right? These are her biblical rights, as enumerated in the pasuk that talks about what if a man marries another wife and not reducing his wife, she'er ksus va'onah. Right? So generally speaking, we render she'er as mizonos, food, medicine, ksus as clothing, and onah as sexual relations. So what if a man marries a woman on condition that you can't claim she'er ksus va'onah from me? That's our paradigm that we're using in this case, in the Braisa. Lema Rav Damak Rabbi Meir, Shmuel Damak Rabbi Yehuda. Could we say that Rav follows the view of Rabbi Meir and Shmuel follows the view of Rabbi Yehuda in that discussion? Disanya, as the Braisa says, Ha'omer le'isha haram v'kudesh esli amanah she'en l'chalai she'er ksus va'onah. He says, marry me on condition that you can't claim these things from me. So, harezim v'kudesh esu t'no batal divra Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says she's v'kudesh es to him, and we ignore the condition that he made, which sounds like, at first glance, like Rav. Right? The condition is void. She can claim Sherksus Fiona. Similarly, Rav says the buyer can claim Onah, or the victim can claim Onah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bedavar Sheba Mamon Tanao Kayim. Rabbi Yehuda says no. When you're dealing with financial conditions, which not all of Sherksus Fiona are, but at least for financial obligations, you can make such a condition, and that's fine. That seems to mirror Shmuel. That's the argument that they want to make. Rabbi Meir is Rav, Rabbi Yehuda is Shmuel. To which the Gemara says, not necessarily. Rav will argue that Kiddushin is different, and that if they were dealing with a case like Onah, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree with me that the waiver is no good. Amar Lach Rav will say to you, Anada Amri Afil Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda would agree with me that in an Onah case, the waiver is no good, because Adkan Lo Kam Rabbi Yehuda Hasam Ela Di Yad Av the Kamachla. Rabbi Yehuda only said in the Kiddushin case that the waiver works, because she knows exactly what she's forgiving. Avalacha, but in our discussion, miyada demachal, you don't know that there is Ona, you don't know how much Ona, we have to talk about what it is that you don't know you are forgiving, but you are, at least as Rav says, ignorant, and even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that you can't make a waiver of something, you can't waive something when you don't know what it is that you are waiving. That's Rav's potential argument. Well, all of this is in the context of Mamonos, because nobody had entertained the idea of a condition beyond that in the simple read of our discussion. Shmuel, on the other hand, is going to say no. Even Rabbi Meir will agree with me when it comes to Onah that your waiver actually is valid. Oh, Shmuel Amar, Anadam Rafil Rabbi Meir. He says Rabbi Meir will be with me that the waiver works. Ad kamokam Rabbi Meir hasam ela devadei ka'akar. The reason Rabbi Meir doesn't accept it in the case of Kiddushin is because there you are actually nullifying a halachic obligation. Right? We know, without a doubt, in Kiddushin, the man owes the woman certain things, and now you are not going to do them. Or, at least that's what you say. The Avahacha, but in the Onah case, Miyemer Dekakar Midi. Who says anything will be uprooted? We don't know if there is Onah involved in this. The Gemara then proceeds to provide two important distinctions between types of waivers. One that we're not going to spend any time on, and one that we are going to spend time on. The first one is the one we're not spending time on. Amar Rav Anan, Rav Anan says, L'didi mifrash ali minei demar Shmuel, I learned from Shmuel the following, Ha'omer l'chaver al-menashe en l'cha al-ayona, en lo al-avona. The waiver that works is where you say, on condition that you can't claim ona'a from me. That works. Whereas Almanah Shein Bo Onah, that there is no Onah, or Yesh Bo Onah, then there is Onah, and that goes to the discussion of Masna Mashikas of the Torah. Are you trying to claim that there should be no Onah versus are you saying I don't want you to make the claim against me? There's a difference between asking somebody to waive his rights and asking somebody to waive the rights of the Torah. Okay, that's the first distinction, and we're not going there. The second distinction, though, is going to be a major focal point for us, and that's the distinction between Stam and Mifaresh. They begin with a Braisa, which is a challenge to Rav. Meisve. The challenge is to Rav. Hanose v'hanosein ba'amana. Somebody who does a transaction, ba'amana or be'emuna, as you'll see it also written, on faith. We're going to come back to this case and try to figure out what exactly be'emuna means. What is your case of nosei v'nosei be'emuna? We'll have to see a machlokas between the Rambam and Rabbeinu Hananel, but right now, let's ignore that case. Or people who engage in a transaction, and he says, on condition that you can't claim onah, ein lo alav onah. The Braisa says there is no claim of onah. In other words, the waiver works. So that's our challenge to Rav. Right? L'Rav da Amar, Ana da Amri, afilu Rabbi Yehuda, Hamani. Rav, if you genuinely believe that even Rabbi Yehuda agrees with you, that in an onah case, the waiver works, if the waiver does not work, then who wrote this braisa? Not Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Meir. Who's left? Is there an anonymous? Is there somebody else involved? So Amar Abaye, Abaye gives one answer. Yeah, Machvar the Rav Amar Rabbi Meir, Shmuel Amar Rabbi Yehuda. He says you're right. The answer is it is a machlokes panoim, and indeed Rav is not going to be in line with Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, fine. Rava says no. Rava Amar lo kasha. Kan b'stam, kan b'mefarish. The distinction is between where the condition is made, where the waiver is made stam, or where the waiver is made explicitly. And you all know, we've already discussed, the fact that there's a debate as to what mefarish exactly means. Either mefarish is going to mean, the way we understand Rashi, that you state, there is onah, that's mefarish, or mefarish means that you state there is onah of this amount. And we see that in the Braisa here. Desanyas, the Braisa says, when do we say that the waiver is no good? Bisam, where it is not stated that there is onah, or the amount of onah is not stated. Aval the mefarish, but if you say explicitly that there's onah, so we give the following cases. Mocha shamar lokeh, chibet zesh ani mocha lach v'masayim, yodeh ani bo she'eno shaba alamana. The seller says, I know that it's actually only worth a money, but I'm going to charge you Masayim, and I want you not to claim Ona. So if he agrees, then that agreement is valid. The waiver is valid. That's the solution. And he gives you the reverse case as well, where a buyer is the one who is engaging in the Ona. The point is that his argument is, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda can both agree with Rav that waivers are no good if you don't specify the details of Ona. But if you specify the details of Ona, then yeah, then they... then even Rav is going to agree that the waiver is valid. Clear? That's a straight read of the Gemara. Now, as we're going to come back to again, you have that machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam, where Rambam brings this case specifically as the Shulchan Aruch of the 200 and 100, and you have to be precise about how much Onah is involved, and then assume the Sma says in Reish Chav Zayin Lamites that the Rambam meant to require this particular language, as the Prisha knows, people don't forgive, they don't waive imprecisely, whereas Rashi is going to be understood to be otherwise. I should note there are potential new nuances even within the Rambam's language. The Aruch HaShulchan says, Mechila works if you say, I know there's a lot of Ono. That's already sufficient. You don't have to say 200, 100, as much as you have to give them a sense of the range of what's involved, and that's going to come back and be relevant later as well. Two notes, just side notes, regarding the language in Mefaresh. One is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav's language, which I brought you in base. He says, Ukshemefaresh kein mutter, avim ha'ona ishtuso yoser. He says, if you are Mefaresh, if you're explicit about the Ona, then this works, the condition is effective, even if the Ona is a shtuser morse. If Pesachei Choshen quotes this and says, you don't even need to say amanas. You don't need the conditional. It's sufficient for you to state, there is Ona. That's the language of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. He doesn't say amanas. So I sell you an item, and I say, you should know, this is worth, this is only worth half of what I'm charging you. Yeah. Cain, that it's 200. Yeah.
Presumably before the
Cain, yeah. Like, just to say whatever it says.
No, not the, no, not the Gemara's Almanas. No. That's why the Pesachei Choshen reads it. If you want to take a look, it's in, it's Perek Yud Ha'ara Lamed Dalet. That's one note. The other note is from the Ktos, which I brought you in, Gimel, where he says, Uba'omer Almanas She'im Ba'ona Havalei Masna Mashukas of Batorah Va'afilu Mefarish Lo Mahani. He says, when we say that Mefarish works, once you make it explicit, you're okay, we still require that your language conform with the Masna Mashukas of Batorah concerns. Meaning that you can't say, on condition that there, I'm selling you something that is worth 100, I'm selling it to you for 200 on condition that there is no Ona. You can't say that. That's still Mathamash Kasa Batorah. You still have to use the language of, on condition that you will not claim Ona from me. It's a fairly logical statement. Yeah. No, but if we reject the concept of Mathamash Kasa Batorah, we're not going to accept this way. And the Ksos does not accept that you can be Mathamash Kasa Batorah for Ona. Mamonos and Ona may be two different things. Because you have Easter involved. Yeah. So that's our introductory notes. The Gemara then does this. Sorry. Right. So I'm gonna. The Gemara then tangents into a discussion regarding Nosei v'Nosein ba'amana, which I'm not going to do. The end of the Gemara there, but we need to understand what the Nosei v'Nosein ba'amana case is because it will relate to our discussion. So Rashi gave this very odd explanation of what Nosei v'Nosein ba'amana is. The Rashi said it's about a producer selling a product through an agent and trusting the agent, but as Tosfos notes, it's really hard to understand what that had to do with Ona at all. The Tosfos and the Rambam have a different take, which I brought you here in the actually, did I not bring it on the sheet? No, I didn't bring it on the sheet. I was going to. All right, I'll tell it to you. Oh, no, I did do it. I'm sorry. No, it's there. It's solid. Yeah. Hanosei v'anosein ba'amuna. Be'amuna ein lo olav onoya. He says, there is no onoya in that case. Ketzad, what's the case? Chevetze v'kach v'kach v'kachtiv. Kach v'kach ani mistakir bo. Ein lo olav onoya. He says, it's about the buyer trusting the seller to tell him what the seller paid for it and saying, okay, I'm going to treat that as the set price. That's Nosei v'Nosein ba'amuna, where we say there is no Ona. Well, you trust me to say, this is what I bought it for. That's the Rambam. Rabbeinu Hananel says no. Rabbeinu Hananel says it's about the buyer buying without being told what the seller paid for it. So there is no set price. He says, "Hanosei v'hanosein be'emuna hareza lo yechashev es hara be'emuna v'ayafa b'shava ela o zeva zeva be'emuna o zeva zeva b'shava." Either you go based on what it's worth, or you go entirely on faith. That's the idea. Going on faith means he doesn't tell me what he paid for it. And there's no Ona, says the Machne Ephraim Tezayin, because you don't think you're getting the right price. You don't care about the price. And that was part of the previous year. Okay. So that's our introduction. So I want to spend some time understanding the Mechila issues that are involved in Almanas and beyond. So first of all, the Gemara's phrase, where the Gemara says, Lo yada de kamachil, right? Or what was the language that we offered in the Gemara? The... Yeah, Amar Lach Rav, right? The Yad of the Kamachla versus Mi Yad of the Machla. Right? The argument that your waiver doesn't work because you don't know in order to forgive it. So there are three different explanations for what that means when we say you don't know what it is that you're forgiving, and there are practical applications for this. The first explanation is you think there is no onah, and that you're only doing this in order to sound good, right? Patume mili either is the seller wants to sound good, and he wants to get a better deal out of it, or you want to sound good because, look, I'm willing to go along with it no matter what you're going to charge me. But actually, you believe that you've assessed what the item is worth, and you know there's no onah involved. You know that you're basically paying what it's worth. That's the first way to take this, and it doesn't work because you're wrong. You're doing it on the basis of an incorrect assumption that you're going to be able to avoid onah. The Sma thinks that this is the issue. If you take a look at Vav, he says, Uba onah hatam de yachal omer, he says, Savarti shame ba onah ulashbiach daiti omer kein. He says, I thought there was no onah, and the only reason I did it was to sound good. That's why I was willing to waive onah. Why not? It makes me look good, and I know I'm not losing anything. That's the simple. That's the first explanation. The Machane Ephraim in Yudalit does this as well. He applies this to the Nose Venosi and Bamuna case being exempt from onah, saying it's because they there is no onah claim in a case of Nose Venosi and Bamuna. You know there's no such thing. That's the Machane Ephraim Yudalit. According to this read, Mefarish in the Gemara just means to say definitively that there is onah, no sum needed. When the Gemara says we're willing to accept Mefarish, right, there the waiver will work, it doesn't mean that you have to tell him what the amount of onah is. You just tell him there is onah, because that way he's not operating under the false assumption that there's no onah, because the seller just told him, I am overcharging you. And that's the way the Knesset HaGedola, commenting to the Torah in Reish Lamed Beis, right, it's if Membeis or Memdalet, he reads Rashi. Rashi on the word Mefaresh in Sor Zion says, Shapiresh lo, yodeya ani sheyesh onah. I know that there is onah, and I'm selling it to you on condition that you're not going to make any claim. Right? That's the way that Rashi reads the Gemara. So even though the Gemara's case was where you told him, I know it's only worth 100, I'm selling it to you for 200, you didn't actually have to go that far.
According to Anderson, so what does the Muna mean? If you're going to give him all these numbers, there is no faith involved in it.
But the case of the 100-200 isn't the No Seva No Seva Be'amuna case.
Oh, it is not?
Two different things, yeah.
Oh.
So that's correct. The point of No Seva No Seva Be'amuna is that it's a case in which you demonstrate that you don't really care about what the actual price is. Either because you're going on faith when he tells you what he paid, or because you don't even ask what he paid. Yeah, that's a different case.
He says, it's worth it to me? Is that a case?
No, that's not part of this. No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Saying it's worth it to me was the discussion we already had previously, and we will have to revisit on Ches, but not here. No. So the issue is simply you thought there was no onah, and you have to be disabused of that notion in order for the waiver to work. Note that the Machane Ephraim Tezayin says this is only where the sam tonight came from the seller's side. But if the buyer is the one who volunteers it, then it's a real commitment. And that's something that we're going to have to come back to when we talk about ways to get around onah. Is there a distinction where the seller gives the commitment versus where the buyer gives the commitment? But take a look already at the Rambam's language in Tesvav Vav. We're going to refer to Tesvav Vav a lot in this year, but I'm going to keep on bringing it on the source sheet rather than make you scroll back up and down. But source Ches. This is in his discussion about products with defects. He says, when you buy something, the assumption is you're buying something that doesn't have a defect. Then Piresh Hamocher, if the seller specified, I'm selling it to you on condition that you will not come back to me claiming defects, then you're able to go back until he specifies what the mum is that's there. Oh, and sheyomer lo halokeach, and lokeach, I added the word halokeach, that's not in the Rambam. Oh, and sheyomer lo komum shei matze b'mekach zeh poches dama l'kach l'kach ki balti yosav. It's clearly the buyer talking. The buyer can say, I am mochel. In that case, we're good. If the buyer says, I'm willing to forgive it, then that already shows great commitment that even if he wasn't told there is onah, this will already suffice. That's Machne Ephraim to Hezayin. But the basic principle is you have to think that there is no onah, and you do it only to. The Stam case where you think there's no onah, the Mefarish case is where you know that there is onah. Clear? And the problem with mechila is you really weren't mochel. You thought there was nothing to be mochel. You thought you were just sounding good. That's the first approach. Second approach, he doesn't know what it is that he's forgiving. He knows he's forgiving something, but he doesn't know what it is. However, there are two different ways to explain what exactly this means. Now, in the following discussion, we're going to go back and forth between whether this is an issue of ignorance or whether there's an issue of what we call ein lo kitzva, that there is no set amount. And you'll see there are distinctions between the two. There are practical ramifications to this distinction. So the first way to understand he doesn't know what he is forgiving means he doesn't know how much he would forgive. He doesn't know what the loss would be. And therefore he isn't genuinely forgiving it. That's the first way to take it. You could forgive without knowing. But people don't. You follow? Someone says to me, there's onah in this case, you should know. And I say to him, don't worry about it. If I don't know how much onah is involved, when I say don't worry about it, I don't mean don't worry about it. I'm not really going to forgive. That's the first way to take this. And therefore what Mefarish requires is, tell me how much onah there actually is. Then it'll be okay. Stam doesn't work because I don't really mean to forgive it. You follow?
Yeah.
Let me show you a thing. The idea is that we reject Stam because in a Stam case, I may know there is onah, but I don't know how much. And therefore, I'm not sincere when I tell him that I'm mocha. That's the way to take it. And that fits the Gemara's case, obviously, of specifying 100 and 200. And it fits the language of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and the Sma and Reish Chav Zayin Lamed Tes likes this as well. In Source Tes, he says, Deim lo kein, because otherwise, Yachol lomar lo yadati sheyesh ba'onah kol kach ve'emchol. I didn't know there was so much onah such that I should forgive it. The other way to take it, though, and this goes back to something I said in the opening shir, is that he doesn't know how much he is forgiving, and therefore the mechila is inherently invalid. It's called mechila betos. It's mistaken mechila. And a waiver that's done on false, not false really, on ignorance, is completely void. Yes.
You don't have that problem.
It's not mechila. Correct. And we see this already in the Rashba.
Why does he qualify that it's not? You see, this is not tied just to an amount in general. It's tied to the details rather than. For example, and it's brought up in this Rashba also, the whole idea that from an even sincere, I didn't see her before, this is our ass. I can't marry a woman unless you see her, and the fact that it's not valid, as the Gemara said that. So you see that it's not tied to an agreement that you know the quantification of the Pagam. You have to understand the details of the Pagam.
Well, the question is really going to depend on the case at hand, right? In other words, the idea that I have to be aware of the details depends on if it's kiddushin, there are certain details I have to be aware of. If it's a financial agreement, there are other, you know, if it's a sale, I have to be aware of others. It's going to be germane to whatever your case is.
So you're saying financial is not just good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So if you take a look at Yud, this is the Rashba's Tshuva. Shalta, you asked the following question. Reuven hivki below shtaru below edem etzel shimon mauslavosim beribis. Reuven gave money to Shimon. He said, Shimon, do me a favor. I know you're a lender. You lend money. So I would like you to lend some money on my behalf. Here's a bunch of money that I have sitting around. I'd like you to invest it for me in loans. And he did it very wisely. He did it without a document, and he did it without any witnesses. Right? very smart people back in the back in the day. Well, Zman Amar Elav. After a while, he said to him, "Ten li mashi esh li biyadcha. Where are my proceeds?" V'amar Shimon, "Ein lecha biyadi klum." Shimon says, "I don't know what you're talking about." Aval, however, I'm a good guy. Aseli mechila shemay mechilas brios. V'atein lecha mana. I want you to forgive me in such a way that God can have no claim on me, and other people should have no claim on me. And if you will absolve me of any responsibility, I'll give you a dollar. That's what he says. Maybe $100. Who knows? So here, Ba'ala Reuven Reim Vlo Ho'ilu. Here, Reuven tries to get a bunch of friends to convince him. No, you know there was this deal. Nothing doing. Rav Reuven Shainlo Shimon Shum Raya. Reuven says, "Well, I'm out of luck. I have no proof." Bishum Kofrlo, and he's denying there was anything involved. Ukadesh Lo Yabed Esakol Azla Mechilas Shemay Mechilas Brios. He says, "All right, what choice do I have? I absolve you of anything. Give me a dollar." So Im Nifter Shimon Bekach Midine Shemayim Im Lav. Does that really exempt Shimon of his responsibilities to God? Shemachus owns of Kasav Reuven Kach, where Reuven really only agreed to this because he was out of options. And the question is, and then what happens if later on Reuven actually finds evidence? You were mochel already, it's too late. So in the tshuva, the Rashba says the following: Teda ki anidon shelefaneinu pshara hizu. He says this is fundamentally a pshara, it's a compromise. Right? You claim this, you claim that. All right, fine, we'll settle on this amount, and you'll forgive me of any further claims. Oh, pshara betos ain't a pshara. Pshara by mistake, a compromise by mistake is not a compromise. He thought he wouldn't find proof for his claim. The Reimatza, lo and behold, he did. And even if there was no ones at all, he thought that he had nothing. Right? It turns out that there is. No ones for it, but he just genuinely thought he had nothing. The mechila would be batel. Which is the key for our point. If you don't know, you cannot be mochel. Mechila is simply not valid. It's a chisaron in a das. You don't know what it is that you're actually doing. And he gives you as an example, uchdisa b'metzia, like in Bava Metzia, in our own discussion. Sorry. Why?
Because mechila inherent in a scenario like this is essentially a yish.
I'm not sure I would go that way.
Okay.
I'm not sure I would go that way. In the Mechila case, there's another party. In the Yeyush case, there isn't necessarily. Right? Yeyush is between me and my object. There may be another one who finds it.
But the whole principle is that someone else has it.
No. Not right now, someone else, no one should have it right now. If someone has it before I have the Yeyush, then they're out of luck. So no, it's predicated on the assumption that there is no one right now. And there's no pressure from the other side. So I'm not sure if we'll still apply the same rule. So the Rashba says, Mechila, without knowing what you're being mochel, doesn't work. And that's the idea. Not that you weren't genuinely mochel. He was genuinely mochel. But we don't consider that an act of mechila. The Ketzos also has it in Reish Chav Zayin Tes. So that's a big question now. Does lack of knowledge really disqualify mechila automatically? Right? The Lecha Mishnah asks a question, which shows up in the Machane Ephraim as well. Not the Machane Ephraim, in Rav Chaim. Not the Machane Ephraim. If you take a look at Source Yud Aleph, he says, Kasha on this issue of Mechila not working because you didn't know. De'ech pasak kan Rabbeinu zal karav, ditzno batov yeshlo alavona. How could the Rambam follow Rav and say your waiver doesn't work due to ignorance? What about Shemitah? Someone says, on condition that you don't claim that Shemitah nullified the debt, right? Shemitah does nullify the debt, right? But on condition that you will not claim nullification, he follows Shmuel, the Tanai Kayam, the Tanai works. Why? There's ignorance. What's the ignorance in the Shemitah case? You don't know whether he's going to pay before Shemitah or not. Right now, I extend a loan to Adam. And I say to Adam, on condition that come Shemitah, you don't claim that Shemitah nullified the loan. So there, I don't know, maybe he's going to pay me back sometime in the next 5 years. I don't actually know for sure what is being forgiven. And Adam, more to the point, doesn't know what he is forgiving. Right? Adam isn't cognizant of what he is forgiving. And yet we say that the condition works. Right? That's his problem. And then the other case where it comes up is the case where a woman forgives her ksuba. The Nesivos brings this in Reish Chav Zayin Biurim Yud Gimel. A woman, we say, is able to forgive her rights to her ksuba. The man is able to forgive his ability to inherit, right, from her. But they don't know who's going to die first, right? So the so how is it that you're going to tell me that that mechila works in those cases, but here suddenly lack of knowledge is going to disqualify it? So two answers. The Machne Ephraim quotes you the Rashba Nun Aleph Amud Beis, but I brought it to you in the Machne Ephraim himself in Yud Beis. His answer is that those other cases are about ignorance. Right? In other words, I don't know. In the case of Shemitah, Adam doesn't know whether he's going to pay me back before Shemitah or not. In the case of the marriage, neither one knows who's going to die first. Right? In this case, it's not about ignorance. It's about thinking something that's incorrect. You actually believe that you are able to evaluate the item that you're about to buy and to figure out whether there's Onah, how much Onah is present. You're actually thinking something that is incorrect. That's a different story. We take a look at the Machne Ephraim I brought you in Yud Beis, the end of the second line, after he presents the question of the of Yerusha as well as Shemitah. Right? The Rashba says, because in an Onah case, you think I'm just saying nice things because it's going to help me to say nice things. Umori Rav Bitzalel Zal, Hevi B'Shem HaRivash Zal, Rabbi Bitzalel is Bitzalel Ashkenazi, the Yeshita Mekubetzes, quotes the Rivash, the time of the Onah, Mishum de Savara, Nabba Dikna Bizvine Ilein, Mishum Kama de Hivna, I checked it out and I think it's worth what I'm paying. Aval Hacha, but here, meaning these other cases, Sheyodea Sheyeshu Zchus Benachasim, Afagav de Lo Yadam Yomus Kodem Kodem, Mechilasu Mechila. There he knows what his merits are. And he knows what he doesn't know. And so therefore you can't compare the two. That's the Machane Ephraim's approach to it in Onah Tezayin. Rav Chaim gives a simpler answer, although I find it hard to wrap my mind around. The Rav Chaim's answer, which I brought for you in Yud Gimel, is he says the difference is that in the Shemitah case, your Tanai works. Your Tanai is effective. In other words, I say I'm only extending Adam the money on condition that Shemitah will not nullify it. Right now, it is a loan that is not nullifiable by Shemitah. For the next 5 years, it is a loan that is not nullifiable by Shemitah. It's actually been converted into a non-Shemitable loan. That's the way that he looks at it. And ditto for the Yerusha case. As of now, it is something that this person is not entitled to inherit. As opposed to the case of Onah, where we don't know anything. There is nothing to be chal yet. That's his answer. I found that a little bit odd, but that's his statement. It's mechila sai, that may not exist.
I like it.
I knew you liked it. We talked about it, but I fine. That's the difference between the guy who went to Karen B'Yavin and the guy who went to Gush. So no, that's not an insult. That's just the truth. So again, we have two ways so far to understand. Well, two ways to understand Stam versus Mefarish within this idea of Mechilat Betalos, but two ways to understand overall why it is that we're disqualifying Stam and what Lo Yada de Machil is. First approach is he thought there was no Onah, and he only did this to sound good. Second approach is he doesn't know what it is that he is forgiving, which either means, like the first, he doesn't know what he is forgiving and therefore he doesn't really forgive it at all. Or he doesn't know what he is forgiving, and that is an inherent disqualification of the forgiveness. We don't accept such a forgiveness. It's simply not valid. The third approach and last approach on Lo Yada de Machil is brought The Imre Bina brings it in Chaf Yud Ches, quoting the Ramban, who was brought in the Sefer HaTrumos, and we saw this in the first shir, but I brought it back here in Yud Dalet. Ulenyon ono shechilku bein b'stam bein b'mefaresh. Maybe we saw some, not stam. Right. Hai taima rabba hu mishum debestam leka mechila. The ha kishar chomekach umemkar hu. Debechomekach umemkar nami. Kol echad yodea shechavero male bedmemem karo kamoshi yuchalalos. He says, when you're dealing with onna, where we distinguish between where it is unstated and where it is stated, the reason for that is because when it's unstated, it's like in all other forms of commerce. Meaning, in all forms of commerce, everybody knows that the other guy is trying to get a better deal. Everybody knows that the seller wants to sell it for as high as... If you ask somebody, right, how much money do you want? His answer is, how much money can I get? And if you ask the buyer, how much are you willing to pay? His answer is, well, how little do I have to pay? Everyone knows that the two sides are working that way in their commerce, and the part that I bolded in Yudalid, Rachmana Amar lo tehevei mechila b'chdei sheyera letagar olikrovo. And the Torah says, that doesn't work. The mechila that goes on in a normal transaction in which each side says, I want the best deal possible, but I know I'm not going to get it, and therefore I'm willing to pay the price that I'm paying, or to charge the price that I'm charging, the Torah is explicitly removing that mechila, saying, well, actually, you could back out of that mechila if you want. You have a certain period of time to do so. The Ramban's point is that this is like, not like, this is Gzeiras HaKasuv. That's the idea. In a Stam case, the Torah is saying there is no Ono. Well, then why does Mefaresh work? Because in the case of Mefaresh, it's no longer under the Gzeiras HaKasuv, because that's not the normal way of doing business. Mefarish is not, as everybody discussed, Jeffrey I think in particular, no one does business this way. No one walks up to somebody and says, hi, I'm charging you $200 for this item. It's not worth $200, but I'd like you to pay that for me anyway. That's not what the Torah was talking about. Yeah.
I mean, it's just no. Like, our shirts aren't worth however much we pay our shirts for. They're worth, like, they're worth 10 cents. But we all know that, and we all still buy them.
Right. The yeah, wait a minute. The
25 cents.
That's his idea, is that Stam and Mefaresh is not really about the, it's not about I thought there was no Ono. It's not about I didn't know what I was forgiving, and therefore didn't want to, or it wasn't acceptable. Rather, this is Gzeiras HaKasuv. When you engage in transactions, it is with the understanding that that there is no such thing as mechila. The Torah effectively removed mechila from normal transactions. That's the third approach. Now, question. If Stam Mechila really doesn't work, what do I do with the last two shiurim you heard about Balabayas? Or shiur and a quarter that you heard about Balabayas? If Stam Mechila doesn't work, then what's going on when you say that if you buy from a Balabayas, you can't claim Ona? That's a Stam case. So, the Machane Ephraim gives an answer which to this day I still have trouble with. I already quoted it earlier in the way that he said it regarding Nosiv and Nosin Bamuna, but he also says it for this in Yudalit. It's in Source Tezvav. He says, Kol echad lo pirish lo shira ona, lo gamar bedaito limcho, u bedaito ludva ona aso. He doesn't tell you how much ona there is, right? Like the Rambam. So then you don't decide to forgive. You intend to claim the ona. Mashain came below kechri balabayis, but now where you buy from a balabayas. Deleka lemeimer delo macha v'dayta hu l'dvoa ona aso. You can't tell me they didn't forgive it. You can't tell me he comes to make a claim. Shari amru halokeri balabayas elo ona. Because we already know the Torah isn't going to give you the right to claim ona. V'kevan delo matzi l'dvoa ona. Okay, gamar machal. And therefore he will go for it. V'chumuchmochem v'nosei v'nosei b'amuna. You understand that this is circular, right?
Going to answer for instance, I mean, if you assume that there, just the Torah said you cannot have mechila.
Yeah.
So then,
but this is not within Ramban, because he's specifically saying Ramban that mechila will work if he tells you that the Ramban will reject that altogether. So this is just, I don't understand what he's talking about and how he didn't see that he was arguing in a circle. Right? There is no mechila by onah because the Torah says there is no mechila by onah because.
You need mechila for the transaction to go through.
Yeah.
Once Chazal said you cannot claim onah,
yeah,
you buy from a baal bayit, and everyone knows that.
But Chazal said it because.
They said it
because you are mochel naturally with a baal bayis. Why are you mochel naturally with a baal bayis? Because Chazal said you can't claim it from the baal bayis. But he didn't say that. He didn't say it. He didn't say there's an inherent mechila. He said you are mochel because you can't do anything else. Like a member to the mochel. Don't say he didn't forgive it because he knows that Chazal are going to insist that he has to forgive it. But they're only insisting he has to forgive it because they know that he has to forgive it. I don't know. I have a very hard time with this. Chidush Rabbeinu Meir Simcha gives a simpler answer, which is at the core of the discussion regarding Baal HaBayis in Tezayin. That's how I felt. We didn't have Ephraim. Chidush Rabbeinu Meir Simcha says, Ulufiani is daiti. Hachiluk hu ba'ofen acher. Zegabe Baal HaBayis havi kemefare. She says, when you deal with a Baal HaBayis, it says, no, it's explicit that there is or not. Dekulei alma yadi. The derech of Baal HaBayis, the money tashmish da yekar. And Allah, the ilulei shiru, but man, lo yarlo. We know he's overcharging. When you do business with a Baal HaBayis, that's what you get. And that's really all there is to it. And that, I think, I mean, to me, that's a much easier thing to understand, and that's why, in some cases, in general, I will not accept mechila, but Baal HaBayis is effectively a mefarish case. And that's why it will actually, work. So what we've seen, we saw the basic Gemara in terms of Rav and Shmuel and waving onah. We saw three different approaches to lo yada de machil. Either he thinks there is no onah, or he doesn't know what he is forgiving, which may mean he doesn't, and therefore he isn't mochel. Or means his mechila is inherently invalid. Or the third approach, that this is the Torah's rejection of mechila in normal commerce. Baal HaBayis is unique, either because Baal HaBayis is unique Machane Ephraim, or Baal HaBayis is unique because that really is mefarish. All the things that we've been saying are going to matter when we get to the practical question of so how do you get around onah? Because we're going to have to answer for each of these with each method of trying to get around onah. What we still have to do next week, what we'll start with, is beyond onah, does mechila with ignorance ever work? And we'll talk about mechila of mumin in a purchase. And we'll talk about general mechila, hakna, and shibud with ignorance, meaning beyond purchases and mumin, you know, in general. And then we'll give methods for avoiding onah in our day, which is two possible adjustments in the declaration of mechila and four possible adjustments in the mechanism of mechila, which can hopefully get us around some of these halakhic problems. And what that means is probably I'm not going to be doing my be'ash nisala. That's what I'm going to guess. But the truth is that wasn't an onah discussion anyway. It was just a sugya that was there. We'll have to figure out what to do about them. Maybe I'll send a marmakomos for
that. Yeah, those are, just mentioned that discussion above the is my suggestion.
We have to.